Welcome back to another episode of If It Be Your Will podcast. Today, we're reaching out to the West Coast, and we are welcoming Bedbug, Dylan Citron from his band, Bedbug, who's been around for a while. Welcome, Dylan. Thanks for hopping on here and sharing a bit of time with us.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying. I mean, I've always been a fan since your record started coming out. But doing a little bit more of a research on you, I'm rather fascinated with some of your history. And as I start these podcasts, I love to kind of get your backstory a bit of when music started to percolate inside you as something that you wanted to do as a human, I guess, living in this world and putting it out. I read a story where you were quite secretive or shy about your music when you were first starting off. Could you elaborate on that story a little bit at your parents' house and piano lessons? And I'll let you share that story because you know it way better than I do.
Yeah, for sure. That's I guess I've talked about this a couple times, but that's some good research. That's some real Nardwar interviewing. But I started making music when I was really young. I had a piano at the house that I grew up in, and I grew up in New York, and I had an acoustic upright piano at the house, and my dad played it all the time. And so then when my parents were out, because they both worked pretty late sometimes, and so I would get home, especially in high school, and I would like, you know, take out the animals and make myself some food, and I'd have a couple hours to kill, normally just doing some homework before they came home. And so I started poking around at the piano a lot. I listened to a ton of music since I was really, really young. You know, my parents were both very supportive, and so it was kind of the thing they said, like, kind of music and books, like, you can really never have enough. And so I'd have to really save up and do some work if I wanted some, you know, like a new video game or something like that. But music and books, they really wanted to make sure that I, you know, was enriched with. And obviously there were limits, but they made sure that I had my own music and all of the reading that I needed to have. And so I had a lot of CDs that I would get at record stores up in Vermont a lot, and I would go based on covers, like album covers and things like that. And I was a pretty voracious reader of like Pitchfork at the time, and so I was just finding a lot of music in high school. And then a couple friends were really into music as well, so we would kind of share things that we really liked. It wasn't really super through social media though, I started writing little piano parts or trying to play songs that I liked on the piano, but I was never really interested in covers. I don't think I ever learned like a full song on the piano. I think I've been playing piano. It's like my oldest instrument. I've been playing since I was like 12. I don't think I could play a single full song. Like, I don't think I know anything realistically, but I was really interested in like different chord progressions that sounded nice to each other, next to each other, and you know, little arpeggios that I could do and the syncopation. And so I wrote a lot of stuff like that. And in high school, you know, I still live with my parents. I lived alone, and there wasn't really much of a music scene. And so most of the music that was around me was kind of like cover bands or, you know, a little bit jammier or, you know, things that were a little bit more inspired by like classic rock and things like that. And so I was never really interested in that. And so, I think it didn't help, certainly, because I didn't feel like there was like a space for me to share music, because I think people would have been like, what the hell are you working on? You know, I think the other thing was that I think I was writing at the time what felt really personal. So it felt like really like I didn't want to share, because it felt like it would be sharing too much,
it's like a journal kind of.
Like a journal. Like almost like more of a journaling situation. And so, you know, I did like the idea, though, of like some of my favorite albums were albums at the time that felt like they were like not just a collection of songs, but like they felt like they were an album. And I think that at the time I was listening to a lot of like Animal Collective and Radiohead, and I think a lot of those bands like put a lot of thought into album to album what they want the album to sound like before they even start writing the songs. And so a lot of interconnecting parts to them. And so I started not really thinking about songs as much as thinking about like full collections of albums. And like, I would write something, I'd be like, this sounds like it would start an album, or this seems like it would end an album. And so I wrote songs thinking about that. It was, when I write something, if I don't have like an idea for what I want to end it or start it, I'll pretty much won't even consider starting writing in general. Because that's, I know that there was a prompt that we were talking about inspiration and periods of creative drought, and that's for sure one of them for me, is that I'll take a lot of notes on my phone, and I'll just kind of know that I'm ready to start writing once I have like, I don't know, probably 15 different little guitar song ideas or vocal ideas that I think I could pull from. And then a lot of the finished writing of the song itself comes from me sitting down with those 15 to 20 ideas and kind of fleshing them all out at around the same time, so that they all feel like they're part of the same cohesive project. And a lot of times they're written and split up in different ways, but for the most part, like, yeah. So I was young and I was figuring out my writing style, and I think a lot of things kind of missed. And yeah, I was putting stuff up on Bandcamp and not really sharing them, but it was yeah,
Yeah, I
that was
wanted
my
to talk about
earliest.
Bandcamp, but I love this idea of you having a beginning in the middle, and as you just mentioned before, this book, music and books were such an important part of your growing up, that you seeing music as a book, I love that image that you expressed there, where you're looking at the totality rather than at the small individual pieces when you're kind of like deciding upon a record or how you're going to approach it. Very inspiring. And kind of hearing you say that too, Dylan, then kind of like thinking about some of your earlier records, and it is kind of a tapestry of, it feels like there are those pieces that you talk about, and then the song, how you weave it around, particular maybe quotes or little lines that you that seem to be pronounced more. I wanted to kind of ask you that, is that this process that you go through, how many songs do you accumulate before you say, okay, I think I have an idea for the totality of the record? Like, how many pieces would you assemble before you'd start engaging the actual process of putting a record together?
Yeah, so I don't know if there's like a full answer to this, because I think that I am pretty picky with the things that I allow to finish. And so I think a lot of times if I were working with a band, like someone would bring an idea, you'd get started, you'd have like a little bit of a framework, you'd have a song, you'd bring some ideas in, the band would flesh it out, and then, by the end of this process, you've got 20, 30 songs and you cut them down. And I think that, for me, because I do a lot of my writing on my own, I can kind of tell if something won't fit or is dead in the water by the time it hits my Nine Notes app of my phone. And so I'm sure I could work with them a lot, and sometimes I do go back, but for the most part, like I kind of know if something will be a song that I really want to keep working on. And
Can I drill
so,
down on that, Dylan? Like,
yeah,
what
for
is it?
sure.
Like, what's the aspect that you say, bam, yeah, I think I have something here that I could evolve into something? Like, what is it that sparks in you that says, I got something here?
The hook is the vocals almost every time. So if I have a guitar part that I think I could put vocals that I like on it, I normally write guitar parts. But if I'm really trying to find a vocal melody and I don't find like something fits, I think that the vocal melody and is kind of the heart of a song. Like it's the thing that like the ear gravitates towards. It helps inform the structure of the song. At least the types of songs I write. And so if I think that the vocal melody isn't quite strong enough, or I don't think I could get a strong enough vocal melody, I don't think it's like worth it to have the song. And I also think I'm a little bit particular with my vocal melodies, and I think that I do the same thing that we were talking about earlier in terms of like books, and that's a comparison that I actually do make a lot. You wouldn't start like a serialized TV show. It's like the difference between watching like a sitcom where you could watch any episode in any order, and like you wouldn't start a season of a TV show halfway through and then expect to understand what was going on. And
Right,
so
exactly.
a lot of the songs, like, they have vo both vocal melody callbacks, they have thematic callbacks, they have guitar callbacks. And I continue this in the new record, but I think that, you know, in the past it's really been pronounced. So yeah.
That's fascinating. And like your Bandcamp stuff, like you've always released, other than this first, the latest one, which we'll get to, but you always have Name Your Price. Like you put your music out there freely available to whoever wants to listen to it. What's your mindset behind that approach?
I've always, this one is currently not aim, Name Your Price because you can't put a pre-order up as Name Your Price. So, you know,
Yeah,
for
I saw it was
context,
$5, right?
not to tell people, yeah, like go wait and don't pre-order, wait and until after and then just do the Name Your Price. I'll probably leave it as $5 for like a week or two because Bandcamp sales push you higher on their ranking if you do get sales in the first week. So, exactly the opposite. Please keep pre-ordering, and please purchase it in that first week so that it goes, you know, just so that it gets the SEO, just so that when you search it on
Absolutely.
Google, it comes up faster. Not necessarily because of the money itself. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of always how it's been. It's not necessarily because of the money itself. I think that, I kind of, one thing I always tried to tell people is like, if you pay $1 on Bandcamp, even if it's Name Your Price, but if you pay $1 and leave like a little note next to it, like Bandcamp thinks that you're nailing it, you're doing awesome, and so they really like push you, and you'll stay on the
That's good
charts
to
for
know.
longer, and all that stuff is really helpful. And so I would much rather, I find, like, you know, a $10 album, if one person's buying it every couple months versus if every couple months I have 10 people spend a dollar on it, same amount of money, but Bandcamp values it much more because if they're leaving a little note, it's more people, like that matters more than how much a person is paying individually. And quite honestly, like when I started writing music, I was in high school. I didn't necessarily need money to pay rent. When I kept writing music, I was in college and I was studying something completely unrelated to music, and it was never really a goal of mine to do. And so, you know, the extra pocket change was kind of nice, but aside from that, like, I wasn't really hoping it would pay anything other than itself, like paying for travel fees and paying for new instruments and things like that, which it was doing at the time. And then now, like, I work at a high school, and so I have, you know, I have a master's degree, and I don't necessarily, I never felt it would be very creatively helpful for me to rely on music in a financial way. I think it would stifle a lot for me, and so. I write so sporadically anyways. It really does not dominate my life in that way. I think that it's really having the security of like a stable job, actually enables me, I think, to write better.
Amazing.
And the music is more of a hobby, and I'm okay with that. I think that a lot of people in the past have kind of looked down on like hobbyists in music. But, you know, for a hobbyist, I
I
think I'm
think
doing pretty well, and I
absolutely.
will commit to it, and I will. You know, I got summers off. I work in a school. Like, I can tour. I
It's
can do all the
amazing.
same things everyone else can. So, like, it's not really holding me back at all. In fact, like, you know, if some disaster happens where I lose all my instruments, I could probably get them back pretty quickly. So, you know, it's,
Well,
I like the way I figured it out.
absolutely. I mean, I think there's a ton of artists out there too that are doing the same thing. I think even more so since the pandemic, that all of these bedroom pop artists have started to emerge from the nooks and crannies of the world. I mean, it's exploded really. These do it yourself artists. And the thing that I like about you is that it's always been progress. And a question I want to ask you is, from your first record that you put out to the one that's going to be coming out this year, well, in a month or so, right? What have been the biggest changes for you in the production, the writing? Like, have those things shifted over time? And like, what are the major elements that you find have had the most change that your listeners would notice?
I think, again, going into what I was saying earlier. Also, I didn't answer the question fully, the last one, by the way. There's a very quick answer is I just think that the music should be free. There's no reason for it to be paid for. There's, you know, if someone can't afford it, they should be able to listen to it. So that's the thing. In fact, I think that they should only pay if they really want to pay. And I think everyone should just have it for free anyways. And then if you decide
I'm
to pay,
right
I
with you
guess,
on that.
there you go.
I love that mentality. Get the music out there. I mean, that's
Yeah.
it's they're going to come to your shows and they'll order records and they'll buy a t-shirt. I mean, that's where you might make a little bit of cash, but
God
the
willing, but
music
who cares if I
itself,
do? Who cares if I don't? Right? It's, you
love
know,
it. Yep.
I'd rather have people like it and listen to it as much
Right.
as they want. So the second question is about the progress there. So this is going to go back to earlier on. So like I started out writing a lot of songs on piano in high school,
Okay.
and so a lot of my earlier records that are scraped from Bandcamp, they are nowhere to be found under other names. We're all just like piano, like long-winded piano pieces. Some were like 9 or 11 minute long songs that were just like on the piano. Since then, when I went to college, I only had an acoustic guitar that I brought with me, and I had gotten it right before I left for college. And so I started writing the songs that would become Bedbug, some of those early de demos and stuff. And I think it depended on what I was listening to at the time and what my inspiration was. But my first record that went down on Z Tapes, like the first full length, which was If I Got
Yeah.
Smaller, that one was really big on Bandcamp. And I did write that one. I was listening to a lot of the band Julia Brown at the time
Okay.
and like Teen Suicide. And
Yep.
I really, really liked particularly the style, the aesthetic around Julia Brown. And then obviously there were a couple other influences. I was listening to Frog at the time because Kind of Blah had come out in 2015. So like in terms of songwriting, that was really inspiring. And then I was stylistically, like in terms of instruments, I was listening to a lot of Radio Department. So recording wise, Julia Brown, like with the cassette tones, having things feel a little bit collagey and messy, like, you know, some of those songs on that the first Julia Brown record, like halfway through the song, there'll be a tape click and the song will just be a completely different song. There'll be like another guitar part in there. And so I really loved that because it felt like you never knew it was coming next. And it felt more like a watercolor or something a little bit more surreal than like straightforward songs. And so I
Yeah,
liked
totally.
that. The songwriting, I was listening, and especially lyrics, I was listening to a ton of Frog and Modest Mouse, and like that really inspired that. And then
Nice.
you know, instrumentally, like drum machine, guitar, and synth, very Radio Department. And so that first record was like that. And I was kind of getting my bearings. And so then the second record, I really wanted to explore like what if I could really make the whole record just feel like one song. And that was when I really like dedicated myself to that. A lot of callbacks, a lot of back and forth. I was listening to a lot of Brave Little Abacus, and I think that they do that a ton,
Nice.
especially on their second record. And so I took that inspiration from them, and which are
That's the
and
one
they're
I'll count to heaven in years without seasons.
yeah, that's the
Where
one. And
it's,
so
you know, you saying that now too, I'm like, yes. It's
yeah.
like a book, you know, like you
Yeah.
create books, that are chapter, the songs are your chapters. And I love that record. Like
That
that
was
was one
an
of my, I love that
I
record.
appreciate it.
Really good.
I think out of all my records right now, like I'm still probably the most proud of that one. I think that the first one
Yeah.
gets a lot of love because I think a lot of people found it at a time that was really important to them. If I Got Smaller, and I think it has like a sound that was a little bit unique for the time, and so I'm still proud of it. But I think the second one, in terms of songwriting, it was just felt really strong. Like it felt like I really achieved what I wanted to do. And so
Totally.
the other thing that I did was there's this band Ghost Orchard. And they're awesome. Their new record is phenomenal. I've been listening to it nonstop. They have a tape. It's incredible what they do with some of the soundscape and sound design. But they did this one thing in a song, I think it's October or something. I don't remember, but it has October in the name. And they do this thing where it's like it's a really this harsh tape hiss song. It's a very cassette driven, like hard to tell what's going on, very muffled. And then suddenly the tape fades out. And there's just this beautiful acoustic guitar recorded in high quality. And then there's like a beautiful synth over it that is direct in. So there's no loss of sound. It's a very hi-fi sound. It's still a little bit like muted. So it's still like they still cut the highs off of it a little bit. So it still like doesn't sound like super poppy, but you know, it still sounds very warm because of the way that they cut off the highs. But the contrast between the harsh tape hiss falling away for this like beautiful, clean sound was something I tried to do a couple times in I'll Count to Heaven. And so that was a really big, the contrast between some really beautiful synths and some acoustic guitar that was untouched with some of the tape hiss. That was something I really tried to do a lot in that record. And I'm proud of the way that it came out.
The character is just, and then if we start looking at your new record that's coming out, I was fortunate enough to get the SoundCloud album, and I've listened to it many, many times, and it's a departure, but not really a departure. It does sound cleaner and kind of more produced, but the heart is still there, at essence of that kind of collagey, bringing parts together. And again, it reminds me of what you said at the start of this, where you classify things by, some words or a line, or and then you kind of fit it all together. I really get that sense with the new record.
I
And
appreciate
I'd
that because
say it's really strong songwriting as well, to
I
boot.
appreciate it because I wasn't sure if it would come across quite as well with the full band because that was really my intention. And then I think that, as I started after I'll Count to Heaven, I didn't know what to do as much because I think I had achieved a lot of what I wanted to do with the bedroom stuff. And so the next one, Life Like Moving Pictures, that was my most song-based album yet. There are a couple of callbacks and things like that, but that one I really went in thinking, I want to write a collection of good songs. I don't want to write like the same way that I've been doing where I spend all this time thinking about the album as a whole. I wanted all the songs to sound like they belonged together, but I wanted the songs to stand alone in a way that they didn't, I felt like in the first two records. And so that was my intention with that one. I think that I did a really good job of that. The people that really like that record, I think, see it. But it definitely didn't hit as hard for people as much as the first two. And then the next step was I gotta figure out if I can translate this song to a band. So that's this current record that's coming out now. I had an EP that we practiced and we figured stuff out, but it was just the same songs that I had written before. So it was just a kind of like a like training wheels a little bit. The new record, as you were saying, like it's the same writing, so it's the same style. I was still thinking about writing songs the same way. I kind of went back to thinking about songs the way that I was thinking in I'll Count to Heaven, where I really wanted it to feel very much like a cohesive story, like a cohesive thing that felt like, honestly, I talk about this a lot with the label and everybody who's been helping me out. Jamie, who's been doing a lot of PR for me, thankfully. But I kind of went in shooting myself in the foot a little bit because I was like, I don't want this to feel like it has any singles. Like, I don't want you to be able to pick apart any song like and think like this one is a standalone, I guess. Not to say that the songwriting, like I didn't try to do a lot of good songwriting in it. I think I tried to do a lot of really good songwriting in it. And I think I wasn't really writing singles. I was writing songs in the context of a broader album. And I think that when taken apart, like it's hard to see like where they fit in sometimes.
Yeah,
And
sure.
so I appreciate that you pointed that out because I do think that there is like a really good, it feels like there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to the record, even if it's up for interpretation what that means necessarily.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more slick than kind of the more lo-fi stuff that you had done in the past. But I mean, the heart, the lyrics, the music is all you. How would you kind of introduce this record, to somebody listening? Like, what do you hope people get from this new record that you're putting out in a month or so?
So I think when I was a kid, before I was listening to a lot of bedroom music, and I mean, I was always listening to a lot of stuff that I felt like had a lot of that heart to it. Like I was listening to like Waxahachie and things like that. Some of those Modest Mouse songs where they really get like a little bit more emotional, like driven. I think I was really into that. But I also really just liked a lot of like the louder indie rock that kind of felt like it was just like recorded in a garage, had a lot of heart, did not care if it was sellable at all, Pavement and Built to Spill. And they ended up blowing up because of it, because people really loved that. But it was really simple, right? Like it wasn't like they weren't like pedal heads. None of them were like going crazy on the guitars. Like they were just writing pretty straightforward rock music and sounding pretty cool doing it. They were writing some cool riffs and like they had kind of a slacker vibe that, like, really, I think, you know, we don't care if it's big, we don't care if it's not, and it ended up working. And
Oh,
so
for
I
sure.
listened to a lot of that growing up, and I really wanted to see if I could write a record in that style. And so stylistically, that was the big inspiration, was like, I wanted to write songs that, like, a lot of the riffs and a lot of the melodies and a lot of the things like that, like, felt inspired by Built to Spill and Modest Mouse early on and Pavement and things like that. But then a lot of those bands, they were just writing songs, and the albums do fit together, but, like, I think up until Built to Spill, I think had with Perfect From Now On, or yeah, Perfect From Now On, they had some big, that record, none of those songs can fit. You can't listen to them on their own. They're barely, I mean, like, they're like 7 minute long guitar epics. They're, you know, they were really doing it. So that was a big inspiration. And then, you know, Modest Mouse, once they went a little bit higher quality with Moon in Antarctica, like, that was for sure pretty conceptual. But I think for the most part, those bands were just writing songs that were just kind of, like, weird. And so I wanted to see if I could take a lot of that style that I really loved, and first of all, just see if I could pull it off. And then second, see if I could say, like, okay, like, now I'm gonna do the little spin that I've been doing on it, where it's like same style, but I'm gonna make it feel like it's a cohesive project. Like, the whole record is gonna feel a little bit more Bedbug. And I'm glad that you picked up on it, because I think that
Oh, it's
hopefully it means
great.
it's successful.
Oh, I am really looking forward to your launch. I wish I could be there to be at your show. You do have a release show, eh? March 15th.
I do March 15th at Permanent Records here in California, and I can say who we're playing with. We're playing with Jordana, which is awesome. And so Jordana and Blonde Goth, who's a, you know, friend out here. So it's gonna be a
Amazing.
blast.
Oh, it
I'm
sounds
not very
like
good at
it's
playing shows outside of where I immediately live, so sorry about
right.
that.
Is your is it going to be a full band for Bedbug? Like you
It's going to
have
be a full
all the
band. Yeah. I've been playing full band for a while now for these records, and I think that we sound really, really good. I've been having a lot of fun playing full band. I think that it's a lot harder for me to write full band. I write a lot slower with full band stuff, because, again, like, I'm thinking about so many moving parts when I'm writing, and that means that, like, I kind of have to have in my mind's eye, like, what I want the drums to be doing or what I want the bass to be doing. And I'm not really a bassist. I don't really, you know, I have my guitars, and, like, I can play drums, but, like, not nearly as well as my drummers can. And so, like, you know, I think that I mostly just know, like, at this point, I want the guitar to be loud and the bass and the drum to be quiet. Can you do big hits here? Like, can you know, so, you know, that kind of thing. And then they fill in the blanks with, like, you know, some really beautiful stuff. So
That's cool. That's cool. It's good to surround yourself with amazing musicians, right? Where you can just kind of throw a prompt and then there it is. It
I
just
certainly could not be on that end of it, so I appreciate that they all
I
can.
agree with you. I can't either. They're special breeds, some of these musicians, eh? Or they
I
just
know. They're awesome.
Well, Dylan, I want to thank you first off just for taking a bit of time out of your day and your weekend. Being a teacher, weekends are sacred, but
Yeah.
it's been really fascinating hearing your stories and a little bit of your background. And I'm really excited for you with this new record. Pack your bags. The sun is growing. Is coming out. What's the date on that? Let me get it so that everybody can
The
know.
15th,
March
same as the release
15th,
show.
same as a release show. So guys, check it out. And Dylan, good luck with the. I mean, you got a lot on your plate, but you're doing everything in a really amazing way, very unique and original and authentic. And it's a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It was awesome.